everything ready. I have your SMS and the fizzers. I didn't read Mazapad or Liz for 72. We're not.
That's a public hearing. We don't have all the surveillance coordinates.
I know that. I figured out that we just.
I told them to hold off until we got it.
Well, we do. I put it at building, not public for this. But I did for it.
What are they asking me for an amendment? For that PS401.
Is this your sense of humor?
I'm gonna do a sales tag.
Oh, that would have really.
There you go.
Now, I didn't want to get it pretentious here. I just wanted everyone to go look at what the heck are they doing?
I didn't want to blow the whole thing.
I just want the Chicken Little effect, not even to you.
Oh, yes. Yes, that's right.
I know better. Hey, I have something to do.
Good.
Well, I cared it.
There's your version of my fine. I have to ask you. I hope it's okay. It's just a. It's not the public. It's just a. It's just a thing to have Sammy Lobby stop and stare at me. What the heck?
Well, of course.
I'll take it down as soon as the meeting starts if you don't mind. If it's okay with you.
Hi.
A little bit of a complication that I didn't find out until I got a little bit longer. The language is still not right for the OSU piece of this, according to the request. So I think it makes more sense not even attempting this thing.
I'm going to open up a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 129. Dr. Warner, could you brief us on what this is and the latest amendment, which I think are the dash fours?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've posted all four of the amendments, and I have a revenue impact for the dash one, but it would be the same for the dash four.
Okay.
Because the dash four just modifies definition of the allocation where it goes to. But if you want to look at the revenue impact, we'll call that up and you can see the allocation. There's several changes in the dash four that are around the structure of the program, the shared service fund program. It changes how the mechanism works in terms of allocating the gain share revenue. Under current law, goes into a shared service fund, and then that's transferred to DAS, and then it's allocated out to the counties, the taxing districts, and the SIP districts. Now those allocations under the dash one and the dash four are allocated through the Department of Revenue. So that's a change. So the idea is that goes directly through that allocation process and not through the shared service fund. The other change structurally is in how the sunset works. The allocation is extended from 2019 to 2029, but under the dash one and dash four, projects that are eligible and agreements that are made prior to 2029, those allocations would continue for those projects beyond the sunset date. So for those programs that get in before the 2029. So it only applied to new agreements after the new sunset date. So that's a different mechanism than we currently have. You can see the allocations there in terms of where we are with respect to current law. The 15-17, there would be no change. Right now we're projecting an allocation of about $94 million. And so that wouldn't be affected. 17-19, we have just 1 year of allocation. In terms of additional revenue going out in the second year of the 17-19 biennium, there would be a transfer from the general fund, or this would be allocated by Department of Revenue before it gets to the general fund, of about $67 million. And then our projections for 1921 are $147 million. That's assumed 6% annual growth in wages. That gives you some employment growth, but we would assume that we'd see wage growth in the neighborhood of 4 to 4.5% for that, for the employment associated with the SIP. And you can see that the allocation, that's the major change really in the program that's in the amendments or in the bill itself. The Washington County districts, the bill describes counties with over 5 million allocation would be subject to this new formula, and that's Washington County currently. So they would receive about 37.7 million for 15-17, and you can see the growth on through 1921. The all other local tax districts would receive about 700,000 in 15-17 as in current law, and then we have that growing. That's not changed by this bill. Those allocations would be the same under as they are under current law. And then you can see 30% of the allocations that would for counties above 5 million would go to the state school fund, and you can see the estimates there. And then there are two other allocations, one to the Higher Education Coordinating Council, and then one to the technical education programs. The definitions for those allocations are different in the four than they are in the dash ones, and also the two and three have different definitions of how those allocations are made, but the percentages are the same at 15%.
Okay, questions on this amendment for Paul up here? All right, we have a work group that was led by Senator Devlin and some other key legislators on this, Senators Hansel and Steiner Hayward and Representative Davis. Do you all want to come up or come up in shifts? Let us know how you arrived at this.
Take the middle.
Okay, I'll take
Gallegos.
Representative Gallegos as well.
He and I can back clean up. Senator Hansel can go, and Representative Gallegos and I can back clean up. How about that?
Sure, that's great. Yeah, sure. That's good.
Morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senator Richard Devlin, Senate District 19. Very much appreciate this opportunity this morning to speak to you regarding the Dash 4 amendments. Obviously, here with me is the members of our work group, Senator Hansel to my right, Representative Davis to my left, and Senator Steiner Hayward and Representative Gallego seated to the rear here, who will be up soon. What we're trying to present today is what we believe to be a true bicameral, bipartisan solution to the discussions over gain share. We believe that the Dash 4 amendments represent a true win-win solution, where at a time when most of the times when we discuss gain share in this building, we're trying to create a win-lose or lose-win solution, depending upon who you're talking to. First of all, one of the things I'd like to do is talk about part of the Dash 4 amendments, but before I do that, talk a little bit about gain share and the underlying concept. Having been around this building for quite a long time and having been in these discussions prior to the adoption of the gain share statute and understanding the strategic investment program and how this came about, I think gain share was a clear recognition of the role that local governments play in the economic development of the state, and that when we are dealing with such major economic issues as the siting of new semiconductor plants or things like that, where the work of the local government is instrumental in that and where they're being asked actually to reduce, in this particular case, the property taxes that they would derive from this, that they should somewhat share in the revenue that comes from that economic development. Often when these discussions occur before this committee, the sole discussion is the amount of money that is going to local government, not the amount of money that is being generated broadly. Currently, the current forecast, Mr. Warner would be a little bit more accurate. I tend to round things to millions of dollars, but the current would be about $190 million. That's attributable to gain share. About half of that under the current formula would be going to local governments, or about $95 million. So it would be a 50-50 share. What the Dash 4 amendments actually do is change that share extremely substantially, It dedicates 15% of the half that would normally be going to local governments to career technical education. That's a particular item that we are finding not impossible, but difficult to find the resources to do what we need to do. And finding some dedicated sources of revenue for career technical education, I think, is broadly supported in both chambers and both sides of the aisle. It obviously is something members talk about constantly. The second portion is we're dedicating 15% to the statewide. So that's the Extension Service, the Agricultural Experiment Station, and the Forest Lab. Now, the history of the statewides is not a very positive history in terms of funding. It is usually an area where previous governors have basically, I'll use a technical term here, whacked it in each recommended budget and left it up to the legislature to restore it. Fortunately, Governor Kitzhaber didn't actually whack it this time, but he actually basically funded it in a flat manner with a very modest inflationary increase. If we were to approve the Dash 4s, it would be the first major investment in statewides that I can remember in my history in the legislature. And I think it's one of the most broadly supported proposals that's before this legislature in this session in terms of if you look at the advocates for that. The third aspect is 30% would go to the state school fund. Everyone obviously is a little bit aware of the discussions that are going on in this building about the state school fund. The realities on in the particular chair I sit in is there literally is no $245 million to move instantaneously to the state school fund. Actually, to improve that number, it's going to take a lot of effort by this body, both chambers, to find additional resources. This is a significant additional resource. 30% in this case would generate about $28.5 million. Hopefully, the trigger will generate it. That's actually in the measure that's before the legislature will actually put forward some more significant dollars, but it's going to take a lot of continuous efforts in this session to actually improve that number. That leaves 40% that goes to local government. We know that there's been a practice by both Washington County and Hillsborough to dedicate a portion of that to local school districts, and I think there's pretty clear indication that they intend to do that. But when I talk now, let me take that 40% back. And I tend to confuse people with numbers. But that 40% represents 20% of that total of $190 million. So effectively what we've done with this amendment is we have moved the local share from being 50-50 of the revenue proceeded to 80-20. I think we believe that that is a reasonable compromise and reasonable resolution of this issue, particularly at this juncture. When people talk about needs that need to be met, but I don't think that they should talk so much about needs to be met at the exclusion of some of the realities of why this program was put together and in denial of the benefits that local governments actually provide to the economic future of this state. I think gain share is a clear recognition of that improvement that actually the participation of local governments makes. Not only in cases like this, particularly in cases like in the Strategic Investment Program, but I think all of us recognize the importance of local government in the economic development of the state. I think what the group here has put before you is a win-win proposal. I know there are still some issues about the language. I'm expecting that those will be resolved hopefully within the next week or so, but I would just hope for your consideration and approval of a measure that ultimately will be decided in both chambers.
Thank you. Questions for Senator Devlin?
I think I'll wait till the – I have questions, but I'll wait till the three of them.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, committee members. And I'd like to thank the Chair for State Representative John Davis, House District 26, representing about half my district is Clackamas County, about half the district is Washington County, many cities. in both of those counties. I'd like to thank the chair for appointing me to this work group. It's been a long and intellectually invigorating experience, and it brought me back to, and I honestly believe that, it brought me back to some of the underpinnings of the SIP program and GainShare. And I'd like to remind the public and the committee of that, in that the SIP program's goal is to attract to Oregon as a state high-paying, family-wage jobs and significant capital investments that would otherwise go elsewhere. So we're talking about the but-for question of investments that would go to other state because of Oregon's system of taxing personal property and equipment, which has an acute effect on capital-intensive industries like semiconductors, biopharmaceuticals, and other manufacturing, high-tech manufacturing industries. And to the extent that the SIP program's purpose is to impart a statewide benefit, the gain share portion is a recognition by the legislature and local governments that local governments do bear a particular burden in that they forego some benefit for the benefit of the whole state. And gain share is an opportunity to provide some compensation to local counties. That being said, this compromise, and that's what I'm calling it, is not one that our local partners are necessarily jumping up and down and saying, thank you, thank you, thank you so much. and you'll hear more about that later, although I believe they are supportive. I would refer to the committee to what we're affectionately calling the donut chart. And I know it's in the record. If that could be pulled up, it would be extremely helpful for illustration purposes. I believe it was submitted under Washington County's letter. Right there at the bottom. And if you go to the second page, you'll see existing law and how it would affect this biennium would dedicate, if we made no changes to the law, 50% of gain shares income to the state to local governments. And if we go down to the very bottom, distribution under SB 129.1, again, the distribution under the dash 4 is the same. Local governments are taking a substantial reduction, in fact, a 60% reduction in the payments they would normally receive under current law. As the good senator said, 20% of the overall gain share. So a 60% reduction. The reinvestments that we are proposing in the state school fund, the career and technical revitalization grant program, which is an existing program that, frankly, I think the majority of this legislative body has signed on to that bill this session to continue to fund CTE revitalization grants, and the OSU statewide service programs. Those investments recognize that there's particular importance in reinvesting gain share funds in programs and services that will lead to a growing economy and a trained workforce, which is exactly what the SIP program is designed to encourage in this state. Through the CTE revitalization grant programs, we have story after story of tremendous work that high schools are doing throughout the state of Oregon to train high schoolers for the workforce and for modern day jobs. Through OSU statewides, we see incredible research and development that's being done in rural Oregon. And of course, we all know the importance of our state school fund. I think you'll hear from this work group that we are proposing this as a reasonable compromise, not perfection. And there is no perfection when it comes to this subject that we have had such discussion on over the last few years. So we're coming to you saying this is a reasonable compromise. We think it makes reasonable investments. Folks are not jumping up and down on either side on this, which, as some of you know, may be an indication that we found a decent sweet spot. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Senator Hanson.
Thank you, Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bill Hansel, State Senator from District 29. As I looked at my part of this workforce, this committee that was the deal, I bring a couple of unique perspectives, I think, to the committee itself and its deliberation. I'm the only member of the workforce that has no constituency in Washington County. I'm the only member of the whose district is 100% rural. And I was looked to, I think, for rural input, and that was probably the part of the team that I was a part of. And as we looked at different parts of that segment of where we could invest back into rural, we considered a lot of different possibilities. And working with my other rural colleagues, began to focus, and I suggested, and we began to work it through extension service, because it was already set up. It was widely distributed throughout the state. It was focused on rural economies. The other parts of it, the forestry, the statewide, all did that sort of thing. And then the CTE. This also was a very important part in the rural economy. So what the challenge became as we began to work through on the particulars, which the chair has, my colleague Senator Devlin has mentioned, was how to put, if we chose these things, how to put the appropriate sideboards, if you will, to make sure to the best of our ability that in the future it would be invested in rural as we intended it to be. And we began to work on the wording, and each word takes on a whole meaning, a whole issue. And I appreciate the help of other colleagues that have helped with the dash amendments. Right now, dash four is the most recent product of how we can do that. We've reached out to the, which I'm sure you will hear later in testimony, to the CTE community of where that money would best be appropriated and why high school versus community college. Extension service is here, and the various things and places that they have for investment in rural community. If we need to fine-tune some of the language, I don't think any of us have any problem with that, guarantee or to focus that this is where we want the money to go and how we want it to move forward. So I'm here in support of dash four amendments to the program. I'm also fine with if the committee has a few, and I understand there might be language issues to fine-tune a little bit more, that would be fine. We want to make sure that the investment in rural Oregon actually is made and the intent and the direction is clearly identified through this procedure. And with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. We'll take some questions here, but I just wanted to express my deep gratitude to all of you on this work committee. These work groups met in the evening. They were long, dry, revenue discussions, and I very much appreciate your work on this. I think we have a good product here. Some questions for these three gentlemen, Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to clarify for the record, and Senator Devlin, I hope we move this thing tomorrow morning at the latest, okay? Not next week. I'm frankly tired of it, okay? To that, just for clarification for the record, the ones through the fours are all attempts to capture what the work group was thinking at that particular moment, because I have been tasked and corresponded with all the work group's members except for Representative Gallegos and Senator Devlin, and at one moment it was this and at one moment it was that. And so I'm quite hopeful that by tomorrow morning, whatever that is, it's finished. I think in trying to put together from my perspective and figuring out what is the exact language from the policy committee before it goes to the Joint Ways and Means Committee, I don't think there's any debate about the school formula, any debate about the Washington County piece. I don't even want to debate the issue about soft or hard sunsets. Mr. Co-Chair, you figure that out in the basement, okay? The only two questions I have is trying to make sure the right or conflicting or whatever language for the OSU statewides and what is the CTE? And, I mean, there's two versions of the OSU statewides. One version type of language tries to make sure that we get all the statewides, but then it's focused into those operations and expenses that are actually in the statewides and not a game of substitution in the city of Corvallis. That's one question for the three of you. How do we do that? And then the second one is I'm hoping at some point, because at one point it was conveyed the CTE through community colleges, which apparently was an error, and now it's CTE through another program in which all kinds of red flags have come up and said, well, this is a BOLI program, and some people said it doesn't have to do with BOLI. So I'm looking for the intent of the OSU statewide and the intent on the CTE. So if there is any tweaking that needs to be done, we can do this quickly, frankly, have it out by the middle of the day and everybody agree, yeah, that's what we all think we said, and then trying to get a move on it if the chair would be so inclined. So does somebody want to jump into those two topics, or is there someone else coming down the line that can answer those questions?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Boqvist, I actually do think some of the parties that are going to be here to testify will provide more detail and probably are the best people to testify. But if I can just give a little bit of indication here, and my colleagues here at the table and behind me, if they want to chime in. In terms of what the statewide extension service, the Ag Experiment Station and the Forest Lab, I think what we're attempting to do is to mirror the proposal that is before the legislature. And so it's actually the details of that proposal, which is an expansion of those. It's not meant to be a substitute for existing funding. It's actually an expansion of those programs is what we were trying to mirror. And the appropriate way now for those funds to get there in terms of their conduit is actually the Higher Education Coordinating Committee, with direction that the funds would go there. In the issue of career technical education, I think the parties that will testify to you is they are trying to expand the revitalization and, they're trying to actually expand an existing program, which is what they actually have before the legislature in terms of the funding request. We actually put a fair amount of resources into CTE in the last biennium, which I think was the first time we put any significant amount of resources into CTE. This would be a continued expansion of that program, which I think has been very successful. And that's actually a program, if I could use an example, just a personal example. I visited a number of rural school districts late last year. And in one of those particular cases, it's CTE can be very broad. It can be everything from computer technology to automotive shop to everything else. So I was talking to this one teacher who was doing a combination automotive shop and welding. And when he took that position, he was really overjoyed because I think he was, I can't remember for sure, I think he was half-time English and now half-time, CTE instructor. The school district had a total of $450 in resources for him and all that he could beg, borrow, and steal, basically. And I think one of the things these programs do is give school districts, give teachers the resources that they need to actually get career technical education back into the classroom. And I think that's what the advocates here will be speaking about. So.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Boqvist, I think that's right. I will defer to both the extension advocates and in particular the CTE advocates who can speak to the effectiveness of the existing programs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just looking for clarity so we can move this at some point in the next 24 hours.
All right. Is it possible to hear from a couple other members of the work group here, Senator Steiner Hayward and Gallegos?
Central assessment.
Pretty powerful work group you all had together here. Right. Take a look at the range.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Elizabeth Steiner Hayward, State Senator for Senate District 17, which is about 1/6 Multnomah County, 5/6 Washington County. And thank you, Mr. Chair, also for the privilege of serving on this work group with my colleagues. As Representative Davis said, it's been a really thoughtful, engaged process and one that I think reflects how this legislature can work well when we bring together people of good faith from both parties and both chambers. My colleagues have really done an excellent job explaining the proposal to you all, and I apologize for having had to step out of the room for a moment, but I would just add that one of my ongoing concerns about the way the program had been structured and what we're looking to remedy is that a significant percentage of the benefits are staying localized in one county. And while that county has done enormous work to bring in important industries that really do benefit the entire state, the tax benefits from that should flow to every corner of the state. And in particular, I like this proposal because it really does reflect the fact that we need to make all of Oregon strong for any one specific area to thrive. So adding funds and perpetual funds, or at least long-term funds, so that they're not subject to fluctuations that often happen with these programs for important services like extension that literally serve every county, every town, every corner of our state, and career and technical education, which is something that, as Senator Devlin said, every single legislator in this building believes in and believes is an important part of the future of Oregon and is critical for reaching our 40-40-20 goals in 2025. We have to have robust career and technical education in our schools, starting, frankly, I personally think in kindergarten, but certainly in middle and high school, to make sure that every Oregonian understands that there's a place in our workforce for whatever talents that person, that child, brings to our community. So having a long-term source of robust funding for career and technical education, a long-term robust source of funding for extension, really makes me happy about this proposal. I could go into more detail, but I think my colleagues have, and I don't think repetition is necessarily useful. So I'll defer, happily answer questions, or defer to Representative Gallegos.
Thank you. Chair Haas and committee members, my name is Joe Gallegos, House District 30 representative, which is Hillsborough and other parts. I want to thank you also for being selected to be part of this committee. Unfortunately, I had the capital crud for most of the meetings, but so my participation was limited. However, I was represented quite well by my staff. Excuse me. I just follow up. I think everything's been said that I would want to say. My agenda from the beginning, and even from my tenure on the legislature, has always been education and finding funding for schools. And I think that this particular dash four is a, as we've talked about, a compromise. But I think also it satisfies my agenda in terms of school funding. And I think that again, if we can and see the reason behind our tech industry is really needing the kind of workforce education that we're proposing would happen with this bill. The other thing I like about what we ended up with is that stability. It'll provide some long-term stability in terms of planning and so on for the counties and for the school districts and so on. So I would also suspect that in reviewing this particular bill, we might be able to see a template for further discussion. Hopefully limited discussion, but certainly further discussion in terms of as we develop more SIPs and as we develop more economic opportunities like this in other counties. So thank you.
Thank you, both Senator Bocas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question for the good representative, because he's the only other person I haven't communicated in trying to make this thing move forward quickly. Representative, I heard from the last distinguished panel, I mean, three key words, and I'm really focusing in on the HEC portion, or the OSU portion and the extension portion, just to make sure you and your good colleague to your left is on board. I mean, I heard three key words about the language of those two programs, statewide, rural, and expansion. Did those three key words seem to be the appropriate words?
Yeah, I would say so, and I sit on the Higher Ed Committee as well, which is Higher Ed Innovation and Workforce Development, and I think, again, this really reflects the kind of thinking that we're doing in that committee as well. So, yes.
And again, Mr. I really appreciate their testimony. I really appreciate their hard work on this.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bocas, if I could just add, it was really an ongoing focus of this committee to ensure that the benefits of the income taxes generated by the SIP programs and the really high-wage jobs that they bring to our state not accrue solely to one small geographic area in the Portland metro area, but rather accrue across the state. And that was an ongoing focus of the work group's discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you both.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thanks again to this work group. We do have a long list of people who would like to weigh in on Maine Chair in general, the Dash 4s in particular. So let's go to some local government people, Mark Clemens and Jim McCauley.
Chair Hess, members of the committee, for the record, Jim McCauley representing Washington County. Had a chance to be in front of this committee a couple of times, several times certainly over the last few sessions on this subject. As I was kind of trying to piece something together here in the last couple of days, kind of at a loss to some extent on how to walk through this, because I think you've heard virtually every message articulated by me throughout, either in this committee or with other meetings. I think the easiest thing to really focus in on is really the kind of the philosophy behind this, and I think the previous panel of work group members provided certainly the backdrop for it. It's a mechanism that we certainly agree is critically important. I think for a local government who's had a chance to go through the experience of signing multiple SIP agreements since the early 90s, we understand the details and have made pretty significant commitments to community infrastructure, and more precisely since the early 1990s, as this growth has taken off within our county. The transportation costs alone are well over $500 million that we have infused into our own county as a result of taxpayer dollars from our county's residents. We have a backlog that is not really that too dissimilar from any other county. We estimate between bridge needs and other local needs, it's somewhere around $2 billion of costs that still need to be met. I think a similar narrative can be said really just for the water infrastructure that we've been dealing with for well over the last two decades. It's an important part of what we have to put money into and what we invest in, and the result of those investments pays off when you get an anchor like Intel and are able to attract Genentech, other companies to the overall economic growth of our county, which again, these do benefit the county directly without question, but there is also certainly the indirect benefit that the rest of the state in every corner benefits from in terms of the tax base and the tax revenue coming into the system. And I think that's critically important as you consider moving this bill through the process. From my commissioners, the message to the legislature is pretty simple. Economic development in Oregon depends on the willingness of local government to find a better tax deal, and that's what's physically in statute. Seven counties, in addition to Washington County, have worked to use the SIP agreements to benefit, again, not just local communities, but the overall greater good of Oregon. I can't stress enough that without that legislative support for SIP, we don't physically have these investments here. And without question, because I've been asked many times, Gainshare is part of that conversation. It was part of our conversation on our most recent SIP that was signed. And I think I've also intimated a couple of times that had we had an opportunity to legally add gain share distributions to that SIP agreement, we would have. And I can't be any more clear than that in terms of what it means and the importance of an incentive for local governments to keep signing these SIP agreements. It's a difficult conversation. It's not something that can be done overnight, over a weekend. It takes place over several months and many considerations over the type of infrastructure needs over time that all have to be captured in part of that conversation. I think the other part of the conversation to be able to talk about is sharing the Dash Ones, or essentially what have become the Dash Four amendments with our commissioners. It's not an easy conversation. They see a huge change, really, in the distribution level. And again, we're moving from a 50-50 share to an 80-20. And I think, as it was described before, this may well have reached the reasonable compromise or the sweet spot. But nevertheless, it is still an incredibly difficult sell within my own commission as they evaluate this and look where things are at this point in time. I think the overall structure of what's put together in those Dash 4 agreements, the investments statewide, state school fund, CTE, as well as the OSU statewide's program are incredibly important. There's no question there is statewide value off of this. And I think from a general perspective of policies and, we'll say, culture and really even economic differences between rural and urban parts of this state, this bill and these amendments actually create a pretty direct link to being able to take success, significant success, in one part of the state and expand that and share it with the rest of Oregon. And I think that's something that is really kind of critical to this overall conversation as this legislative committee as well as the body examines this as it moves through the process. So I think it's time to move this issue forward, provide some certainty and some stability needed for both CT as well as statewide's, but also for local governments to make sure that we continue to have an incentive for continuing to sign these SIP agreements again that benefit the entire state. I'll be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Let's go to Mark Clemens.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Mark Clemens. I'm the Economic Development Director for the City of Hillsborough. I'm here today to testify in support of the Dash 4 amendment to Senate Bill 129. I'm going to reiterate much of what Jim just said. I think it's reasonable, fair to say we agree with Representative Davis that we're probably not jumping up and down knowing that we're going to take a 60% cut in gain share. However, we believe that this is a reasonable reasonable and balanced approach that does benefit education and statewide economic development, and that is important for us. I think two important principles that this bill also does for us is, as Jim has said, it maintains the partnership between the state and local governments for economic development. That's a critical foundation of gain share, and we believe that's a very important partnership that this bill maintains. And secondly, it does provide certainty and stability for us, allowing us to better plan and meet our community needs long term. Hillsborough is often referred to in Washington County as the center of Oregon's Silicon Forest. Hillsborough is proud of that reference, and the effort and investments we've made to help bring some of Oregon's largest employers to our city and to the state. When companies like Intel and Genentech invest in Oregon utilizing the Strategic Investment Program, the benefits of that investment are enormous and flow to every part of the state. The fundamental principle underlying gain share is recognition that local jurisdictions shoulder the financial risk and make necessary investments in planning and infrastructure in pursuit of the state's economic development goals. Gain share was enacted from this partnership perspective to help cement that partnership between state and local governments for statewide economic development goals. We're here today because the SIP and the Gainshare programs have been successful beyond anyone's imaginations, including mine. Gainshare was sound policy when it was enacted, and it remains sound policy today. It is the combined success of the SIP and Gainshare that now has us reviewing the distribution of Gainshare funds, not the underlying policy. Certainly, we greatly appreciate the legislators the work of the legislators who crafted the Dash 4 amendment. We believe this reflects a balanced approach to the redistribution of gainshare funds in a way that acknowledges Hillsborough's and other local jurisdictions, the investments that we make, while enhancing benefits to the rest of the state. These are wise investments, just as private and public investment in Hillsborough benefits all parts of the state, public investment in other parts of the state benefit Hillsborough. The collaboration and distribution of resources does indeed enhance One Oregon and makes that connection between economic development at the local level and statewide. Thank you for your time this morning, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Clemens, how critical is the gain share conversation when you do an SIP? For example, we recently went through this. What would be the difference if Gainshare weren't there versus whether there were? Is it in the conversation or the recesses of your mind or with you and your partners when you're going through those deals?
Yeah, I think it is an important consideration as we go through the deals because, you know, we're doing the deals based on SIP agreements. The county has a formula for capturing some additional fees, but in the back of our mind, we always know that there's the gain share backup and that there is a backstop resource that's going to be coming to support the work that we're doing and frankly, the hit we're going to take by doing the SIP agreement. So I think it does fit certainly into our minds as we are doing the agreements. I'd say it's critically important.
Questions? Senator Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Senator Devlin and Mr. McCauley both referenced 80-20, and I just read this amendment this morning. I'm reading it. So explain how it's 80-20.
Sure.
Because looking at the bill, it looks like it's 60-40. Okay. I'm not questioning your math. Could you explain it to me?
Of course. Chair Hass, Senator Edwards. Yeah, so the 80-20 is in reference to the overall share. So when you look at the total $190 million pot of gain share money for the biennium, mm-hmm. current statute shows a 50-50 share. When you physically back out the $38 million, which is the local share at the end of these Dash 4 amendments, that percentage of the total pot is only 20%. The 80% is essentially the state's share. The reference to a 60% and 40% just focuses on that half of the 190 that is in statute as it exists today.
Okay.
So there are just two different ways to describe essentially the same break.
Which is 100%? Is it 100% of 100 or 100% of 50?
Okay. Thank you.
That's in that the donut graph.
Yes,
on OLS.
Donut graph.
Donuts.
The chart is up on the screen now, Senator Edwards. Down.
Coming down.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
John Rakowitz and Brian Krieg. I would ask that those of you who have signed up here to just submit your written testimony instead of reading it. Come on up. We got another bill after this, and we're moving from gain share to the Pacific Wonderland, and we're anxious to get there.
That's from the fantasy land of the Pacific
Guyan
or something.
Good morning. John Rakowitz with AGC, Associated General Contractors, and my partner in crime here, Brian Krieg, will introduce himself. We have been involved for about 5 years in a very broad coalition trying to revitalize career technical education, which has been dismantled in the state over the course of the last 20, 30 years. We do it because industry, ours and others, are facing more and more acute workforce shortages for really high-skilled, high-paid, high-demand occupations in the state of Oregon. And we don't have a system that will actually give our students an opportunity to fill those jobs. So that's the underlying premise why we've been at this for about 5 years. What we came to this party pretty late. It was Monday. We got involved in trying to answer questions from members of the work group that just testified and members of this committee to try to define a little more carefully what the use and how the career tech education portion of gain share revenues would be utilized. The Dash 4 amendments reflect the effort of Brian and myself as of yesterday. I'm certainly in support, and I believe he will testify to the same. We base this upon law and that was approved in 2011 when the first couple of million dollars for career tech education grants were first allocated by the legislature. In this biennium, it's about $11.5 million, and there is a statute. It is 344.075 that guides this. We have anchored this, and I want to read to you three parts of that statute, because those are the things that we believe will answer most of the questions that have come up both informally and today. Number one, The statute is the Career and Technical Education Revitalization Program is established within the Department of Education. So it is a separate program established within the Department of Ed. Number two, and I'm not reading every piece of the statute, I'm trying to get at the ones we think anchor this in a way that answers questions. The Department and the Bureau of Labor and Industry shall jointly establish a committee, set the goals for the program, develop the criteria, review all grant applications, and make recommendations for the use of these funds. The committee must represent business, industry, labor, and education providers. Our experience has been industry and business have been very much invited in and been very, they have adhered to the principle and the intent behind that. I have a member, a former past president of mine association who sits on that committee. It has from the inception. And finally, I think really important, in addition, the department and the committee shall give priority to applicants that represent a diverse number of students served and a diverse selection of geographic locations. We are acutely sensitive that this must look at and entertain and support programs around the state. Now, I do want to be clear about something. $4.5 million, the sort of estimates we're hearing right now for the next biennium, is not going to fund a career and tech education programs around the state. But we have to understand these funds and the grant funds, this is not the only source of funding. This is a dedicated source of funding, which is critical to us. The grant funds are in the base budget, roughly $11.5 million, we believe, as we dig around in the budget. And frankly, there are other efforts underway in this building to add to this. We don't see this, we see this as incentive and money that will help with things like career tech education in the modern day is expensive, and expensive for two reasons, facilities and equipment. You have to have equipment that people actually use in the real world, in business, in industry today, or you're not providing training that has any real value. So we are very much in favor of this because in the high school, I'll just give you a statistic. People coming into our industry's apprenticeship programs are on average 27 years of age today. We are not connected to the high schools. Where have they been since they left high school until they got to us? We pay on average $52,000 a year. That's average. On my side of the industry, commercial, we pay way above that. You can think of your own electrical contractor and what you pay them to see what kind of wages we pay. So this is not intended to fully fund, nor could anybody imagine that would fund career tech ed and revitalize it throughout the state. You have to back up and understand the core, there are school districts long before any dedicated funds to this purpose, they have invested funds, their own core funding to establish these programs in different parts of the state. We want to expand on that and expand in places where people need the jump start to get at those additional costs. I'll take ACE Academy. It's and you don't need one of these programs, nor are we suggesting they need a program in every school, or for that matter, in every school district. East Multnomah County, four districts, send students to the ACE Academy, architecture, construction, and engineering. It has been in existence. That's four school districts serving 75 to 100 students a year. Been in existence for almost 10 years now. Why that's important is that's a joint effort that can give incredibly quality types of opportunities, real live opportunities to do outside the classwork, on the job work, and allow these students to figure out which piece of the construction industry they really want to join. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Brian. He's got some particulars on how the money has been spent to date that has been guided by the statute that I just reviewed in part for you. Thank you.
Chair House, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brian Krieg. I'm here today representing the IBEW, the UA 290 Plumbers and Fitters, the Sheet Metal Workers, Local 16, but also their contractor organizations, the plumbing mechanical contractors, and the sheet metal and air conditioning contractors. And also for the record, I will note that I am the current co-chair of the Grant Advisory Committee for CTE. as John has noted, over the last 25 years, we have seen a dramatic and devastating decline in the CTE area in our state, in the schools. We have been building high schools and middle schools for the last decade that do not have these physical facilities within them. This is critical for many of our industries in the state. I mean, I'm going to start out by just saying you can't outsource your plumber. We need to make sure that we are going to have a pipeline there of people coming in. And it's a pipeline that's needed not just by my building trades that I represent and the construction industry that John represents, but it's also for others. Even the community colleges are noting that they're having a problem because they're having to train and give basic skills that should have been there, and they're getting the students coming to them later in life, too. That issue of the gap in time, where have they been? What have they been doing? They've been putting away monies in their retirement or having health care. Many, many big issues on there. 5 years ago, the state itself of Oregon was giving no money to CTE directly on this. 4 years ago, we started down a new path with founding of this grant program. There was $1.8 million. The charts in front of you, I'll refer to those in a couple of places here. 4 years ago, we got the revitalization going, and that started to turn the ship around. And it was interesting. There was a lot of folks out there who had been concerned about this and started coming, you know, to the forefront and saying, this is a problem. Thank you for getting this moving. At the Department of Education, we put the program there, and there were a number of concerns from industry when we first started down this path, because 25 years of decline.
Brian, we need to start wrapping this part
of it up. We needed to have in the grant that we had high demand, high wages, partnerships, sustainability, and geographic diversity for the grants out there. The charts in front of you, you have one that has a map that shows all of the ones that we have given in the last few years. The first year, there was 8 grants awarded. We had a big oversubscription for it. The next year, in the 13-15 time period, we had 32 grants awarded. I think the last chart is one of the most important ones as we're looking forward to the situation. The green bar chart in the bottom corner, it has $384 million that the state of Washington is putting to their CTE programs at the same point in time that the state of Oregon is putting $11.2 million to their CTE programs. There are issues going on about that. They're training their workforce. We're not. We're not preparing our people enough on that. So in wrapping up, the grant committee that I work with has representation that is very balanced. And it's an interesting thing. The commitment of industry is really shown there. As John has noted, he has a person there, but myself, John Chandler from the Home Builders, and John Mullis from the Building Trades, we have all served on that from day one and plan to into the future, because we wanted to make sure that the monies were used correctly by the department and industry and businesses are involved. We have other business people on there, and this has been a very big success in cooperation and focus. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Questions, Senator Burchard?
So under the revitalization grant program under ORS 344.075, mm-hmm. Bureau of Labor and Industry plays a role in how they distribute the grants?
No.
They do not?
They do not.
What role do they play?
They jointly appoint with the Department of Education the advisory committee that we've been speaking to. That's it.
So who gives follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Follow-up.
Who gives the grant? Who makes the decision where the grant money is?
The advisory committee makes a recommendation.
And they
by
do
statute
play a role in it.
And they play a role in the appointment of the advisory committee. They do not play a role in, once the advisory committee is appointed. The funds are a dedicated program within the Department of Education, number one. Jointly, they appoint the group. The law requires them to appoint business and industry. We've written that in very specifically, and we've just named the kinds of members that actually sit there, go through the grants, make the recommendations, and then the department awards those, Department of Education awards those based upon those recommendations. That's how it works day in, day out.
And if Senator Haas, if I can add to that, the grant, the selection of the grants is a very vigorous process that the department does oversee. The grants themselves are a bit lengthy. They are scored with raw scores by a larger grant review committee. We had, I think, 42, 43 people that were involved with that. Every grant is reviewed by at least three people, of which at least one of them is from business industry on that. When we get when the raw scores are done, actually the grant reviewers all come together for a day in Salem, and the people who have reviewed a particular sets of grants, each reviewer is reviewing four different grants in this last round, they sit down and they compare the notes and make adjustments on that. The raw scores are given to the department. The department also checks on some financial issues and all in the background to make sure that we're making good investments. Then that has to be calculated by looking at several other factors. In the legislation, we are required, and we pushed for this, industry pushed for this to be in there, geographic diversity. So a third of the grants are given to rural, a third to urban, and then the middle third is a combination and is based on their ranking scores. So we actually do adjust a few people up and down that might be in a rural type of situation that maybe didn't rank quite as high as some others schools that did apply, trying to find balance. And that's why we're trying to find balance across that the chart and the maps. It's a lengthy process.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So looking at your map, I can see Southwest Oregon, which is my district. There has been no grants.
Yep.
Thank you.
Correct.
Thank you both for your testimony and your help with this. Very quickly, I just want to take a brief look at the extension, OSU extension part of this. Jock Mills, Katie Fask, Ivan Molesky are here, and I don't know if you all have testimony, but we've got about 3 minutes left to do this. Sorry.
Good morning. Thank you. Jock Mills, for the record, Director of Government Relations at OSU. I will rely on both Katie and Ivan to tell the story. I just want to thank you, Mr. Chair, for your work during the previous two sessions. That we would not be here if we didn't have an independent board that had developed a budget request that we were able to move forward working with a broad range of constituents. It was the board that developed this initial $16 million increase that we're bringing to the legislature this session. We can address many of the questions. I'll let Katie and Ivan go there, but we're more than happy to address the 40 FTE that are associated with the $16 million increase. Those are distributed across the state. We have ag experiment stations across the state in places like Burns, Ontario, Hermiston, Pendleton, Astoria, Newport, Central Point, all over the state, extension offices in all 36 counties. So we're quite confident we'll be able to meet the statewide impact you're seeking to achieve with this goal. We're also supportive of the Dash 4 amendments to the extent that they try to deal with this issue of certainty of funding down the road so that these funds, in essence, supplement, don't supplant the existing state investments in these programs. Thank you.
Hi. For the record, Katie Fast with the Oregon Farm Bureau. Farm Bureau is in support of Senate Bill 129 with the Dash 4 amendments or other amendments coming that have the intent of the work group. You know, we've been working for over a year on the $16 million ad package that is actually found with similar principles as in the amendments in Senate Bill 657 to add back growth in these programs that have been needed. The OSU statewides have not seen or recovered from the recession and seen an increased level of funding from the legislature. We're operating under the same budget levels pretty much as 07-08. And these are the natural resource sector's research and development programs. And I'll just close with a dollar invested in these programs means a $10 return statewide. It will bring back additional research dollars for every dollar invested, and also the multiplier impact for the industry right now in 2013 was over $180 million. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions. I will also add that Farm Bureau is additionally very supportive of the CTE program That is an area where several local rural schools are struggling to have the shop classes, the FFA programs, in budget crunches. Those are the first programs to go. And so it's a program that we've been happy to see added back in and something that we're excited to see expanded. Thank you.
For the record, Ivan Molesky with Friends of Family Farmers. Very nice to be here today, and thank you for considering this bill. We're happy to be here in support of expansion of the statewide public service programs as reflected in the Dash 4 amendments today. Just to underscore what has been already articulated to some degree, but this program has statewide benefits. The extension offices, the ag experiment stations, the forest research lab have benefits across rural Oregon. They help with important research needs and on-the-ground educational opportunities to help us improve on water quality, on sustainable management practices, small farms and community food systems, a lot of programs that our members use and that farmers and ranchers across the state take advantage of. As Katie said, for every dollar invested in these programs, you've got a $10 economic multiplier for these communities. That's a very good investment. So I think I'll wrap it up there because I know you're short on time, but we wanted to articulate our support today. Thank you.
I appreciate the testimony from you, Ivan, and Katie and Jock. Thank you very much.
Hey, Mr. Chair, I have one quick, very, very quick.
Go ahead,
Senator. Jock, just to confirm what you just said in testimony is that the $14 million envisioned in the 129 amendments, all of them, would go towards funding the $16 million project that you just put up there.
That is correct.
Thank you, we're going to have to close it off right there, and I'm going to close the work session and public hearing on Senate Bill 129. If you signed up to testify and didn't get to you today, we'll take another swing at this because we're going to carry this over until tomorrow. Vote on whether to move it down to the Ways and Means Committee and on whether there's a newly refined amendment to this that straightens out some of the technical questions that came up today or not. So, and again, my gratitude to the work group that's spent the last month or two working on this. I'm going to open a public hearing on the Pacific Wonderland, Senate Bill 472, with a quick briefing from Mazin.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the Senate Bill 472 comes to you from the Senate Business and Transportation, and this bill, in essence, expands, as you mentioned, the Pacific Wonderland registration plate, actually doubles what is in statute today, which is 40,000, and extends it by 40,000. Also, the A version of the bill, as it reaches you, changes the ability of this revenue coming from a bill to be used by the Capital Foundation for the general purpose use. The other 50% still goes to the Oregon Historical Society, and in OLIS, you have both an SMS and a preliminary revenue impact statement. This is for the amounts that would be coming to the total for the Pacific Wonderland renewal.
Thank you. I have Fred Neal signed up. Fred, and I see former Senator Assis. Are you okay? We're laying it all on you, Fred.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair House, members of the committee. I'm Fred Neal. I'm currently chair of the Oregon State Capital Foundation. Thank you for considering this bill. It comes to you unanimously from the Senate Business and Transportation Committee, as Mazza said, and will extend the Pacific Wonderland License Plate Program for an additional 40,000 plates, which we anticipate would be another 5 to 6 years. We come to you during the regular session because they're very popular. They continue to be popular, although it's a small portion of overall of the number of license plates that are issued by DMV. They are a critical component of both funding the Oregon Historical Society and our History Center here at the Capitol, and our other responsibilities. The amendments from Senate Business is to allow the foundation to use the monies for general purposes, all of which are enumerated by you, by the legislature, in ORS 173-500. Basically, we would then be able to have some stable funding for an additional five to six years with this money. The amendments were approved by Senators Johnson and Senator Farioli, Senator Farioli is a member of the foundation board, and in partnership with Carrie Timchuk and the Oregon Historical Society. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Fred. The original reason for this 40,000 limit was because...
Well, I think it was an effort to try them out. Certainly at that point, the Oregon Historical Society was in distress. And in addition to a Multnomah County, the electors of Multnomah County passed a levy to help the Historical Society. And about the same time, the legislature authorized these plates. In addition to get a kickstart on the History Center, which we now call the gateway to the Capitol, we were included. Why 40,000? I don't know. I know that it took us a while to start up the gateway. We had quite a bit of planning involved, and then RFPs through legislative administration to get the right contractors and get going. But we've really come a long ways. You'll see the evidence of it in the Galleria. We hope to improve on that and keep it going and have a permanent enhanced visitor experience at the Capitol.
And the price is still going to be
$100? $100 DMV, and I know that they're here. They take about $10.84 per plate, and then the remainder is divided equally. It's a one-time only cost to the additional $100 as a one-time only tax-deductible expenditure by the automobile, the license plate purchaser. And DMV recovers their costs. And then, of course, every 2 years, the plate holder then just simply renews their automobile registration.
Fred, do you have plates? These plates on your car?
Both of my vehicles have plates. They're higher numbers. There was some competition at the beginning, especially by the antique and vintage car aficionados to have the lowest number possible. I, on the other hand, on a limited retiree income, waited until my plates expired to buy Pacific Winterland. But I am proud to state that everything but my utility trailer does have a Pacific Winterland plate. Does yours?
I'll note, Mr. Chair, that there is a parking spot in the garage that's closest to the elevators that has a really, really, really low numbered plate.
It's
0007
wow.
Or 9 or something like that. So,
who are these big shots?
My understanding is you had to be at the right. You had to be at the right DMV office the first day they came out in order to get that low of a number, and it probably was the Lana Avenue office, the main office.
Okay. Well, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you for your volunteer time on this important foundation.
It's a challenge and a pleasure. Thank you.
Okay. That clears our agenda. Thank you, committee. We're gonna wrap it up for the day and come back with a work session on Senate Bill 129. We will adjourn.
Hi.
We will adjourn.